Voices of Change by CAFOD. I am Celeste, your host, and today we're honoured to speak with Sandoom, who works for CAFOD's partner, Law Society, LST, in Sri Lanka. Join us as we explore his insights on debt justice in Sri Lanka and the impact of the debt crisis right now, and how CAFOD's supporters can get involved in the campaign to cancel the debt. Welcome, Sandoom. How are you?
Good to be here. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Really happy to have you here. Could you just tell us briefly, what do you do?
Yeah, okay. So I would like to introduce myself as a human rights defender, social activist. So I've been like for the last 20 years, I've been working on the various human rights issues in Sri Lanka. And currently I'm working with Law and Society Trust, which is like a CAFOD partner in Sri Lanka. I'm the Director Programs and Operations.
Okay, fantastic. So we're going to have a really, really cool conversation.
Sure.
We're going to find out a lot more about the debt and what's happening in Sri Lanka. Before we dive into that, I've got some quick fire questions.
Sure.
Yeah, ready?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So if you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
It will be milk rice. So it's a local Sri Lankan dish. I'm not sure whether any country has it, any other country. So it's a dish that's been cooked with rice and coconut milk.
Ooh.
So it's quite heavy though, but I like it.
You like it? Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Well, it sounds very delicious because I like coconut milk, so that sounds good.
That's good.
Fantastic. Okay, second question for you. Is there one thing that you've always wanted to learn, but you never had the chance or the time to do it?
Yeah, so in Sri Lanka, we have two main languages, so Sinhala and Tamil.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unfortunate that being a small country with two languages, most of us can't understand each other's language. So that's part of the problem also. So that's something I always wanted to do, to learn Tamil properly.
Okay.
So that's been like my like to-do list for last 5 years, but I think it's my fault that I really didn't do that. So that's something that I really want to do within the next couple of years.
I think 2025 is the year that you're going to
hopefully,
it.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. So I know you're very busy, but what do you do to try to relax when you have some time for yourself?
Yeah, there's a lot of hobbies earlier. So like used to read a lot, and I think best hobbies to just to sleep.
Mm.
But now I'm married and have kids, so spending time with them is the most kind of like best thing I can do in my free time, that thing I like to do. Yeah, occasionally go to the pub also. It's a good way of getting relaxed.
Okay, yes, it is. So I hear that you live outside Colombo.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you work in Colombo.
Yes, yes.
What is that like in Colombo?
Yeah, so I think main thing is I don't want to live in Colombo. So because I normally don't like cities that's crowded and polluted and everything else. So that's why I try to be like work outside of Colombo. So with COVID and everything, luckily in a way that we have this distance working arrangements that make this possible. But whenever I have to come to Colombo, so I travel by train. So it's like a 2-hour train ride. And then sometimes I stay in Colombo. But now staying in Colombo is becoming really, really difficult because with the economic crisis and inflation and everything is so expensive.
Mm.
So if you like live and eat from outside, and if you have to rent places, it's becoming impossible to live in Colombo now.
Wow.
If you really not get like have a like proper income, so it's becoming difficult for everyone. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And are there anything specifically that you really love about Colombo, or even where you live?
Yeah, I think it's generally in Sri Lanka. So one thing, like, it's about its people.
Okay.
No, so like we have our own fights and everything else, but we generally like friendly nation.
Okay.
So people like kind of solidarity, kind of like friendship. Being a small country, no, so you know each other.
Mm.
So you get that kind of like a social background, social networks going. So, and you know there will be someone when you need it, no?
Mm.
So it's not that you are on to your own.
On your own.
So you know there's someone else there. So that's nice. And the sun maybe. Like I don't like sun per se, but like when you come to here, you realize what you miss.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking, because it's a very grey day here in London.
Yeah.
But we could do some of the sunshine that you've got over in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
And so we know it's a coastal country.
Yeah.
Could you tell us then a bit about the flora, the plants, flowers? What's it like?
Yeah, so for a small country, we are a tropical island.
Mm.
So there's a huge diversity, there's a huge biodiversity in Sri Lanka.
Mm.
So you can find like tropical forests with a lot of animals, like elephants everywhere.
Oh, nice.
So you like, so you find a lot of elephants, so being the like most visible kind of animal you can see. And then from every kind of bird, monkeys, deers, tigers,
yeah.
and a lot of dogs on the streets, and like a lot of birds and everything. So, and then we have a certain area of rainforests also, so where you can see a lot of like orchids and other kind of like indigenous plants in the country. And then we have a coastal kind of ecosystem with mangroves and prawns and like various fish varieties. And then we have a lot of like marine kind of biodiversity around the country, as well as inland kind of water sources with a lot of like indigenous fish varieties and a lot of, it's a beautiful country with a lot of diversity,
yeah.
so much of it.
It sounds like it really is a beautiful country,
yes.
and I'm so lucky to have all this available and stuff. I'd love to be able to just walk out and see like an elephant not too far away.
Yeah, you know, but a bit scary, but yes.
Yeah,
they can attack you, yeah, but
yeah. Wouldn't get too close,
but like, hi, elephant.
Okay, so thanks for our quick fire round. So we're going to change lanes a little bit now. We know and we've heard from you about, you know, the beautiful country of Sri Lanka and the people. We also are aware that there are challenges that are facing the people of Sri Lanka. Could you tell us a little bit more about the biggest challenges that they're facing right now?
Yeah, so historically, Sri Lanka, because of its colonial kind of heritage and everything else, no? So we didn't have the kind of like a economic development that kind of enables everyone to have a like a dignified life.
Right.
So poverty is a kind of like a historical issue that Sri Lanka has been facing, one of the biggest issues, especially majority of the people who are living in rural areas, in agriculture and other sectors. So the rural poverty is one of the biggest issues we are facing, especially for the young people. So when we went through a number of conflicts in the country, so one of the main reasons for the conflict is the current Sri Lanka's economy is not being able to provide better opportunities for the young people, better future prospects. No? So poverty is one of the biggest issues.
Mm.
And maybe even bigger than that is, we, although we have like only three kind of like main ethnic groups, Sri Lanka is a highly divided country. It has been because of the colonial rule and how they used it, how they used this divide and rule approach.
Right.
And when after British left in the country in 1940, so from that point onward, these conflicts between like the tensions between the main ethnic groups has always been there. And it kind of turned into an armed kind of a conflict in early 80s.
Right.
So war and conflicts and ethnic issue and then kind of mistrust is, has been always been, a, we had always had this kind of really vulnerable kind of social fabric. People don't trust each other.
Mm.
There are a lot of suspicions about each other. So that's been like one of the biggest, other biggest crisis, like kind of challenge we've been facing.
Mm.
And now from 3 years back, we are facing one of our like biggest economic crises. If you are like familiar with the context in Sri Lanka, you have seen like in early 2022, we didn't have electricity. There was like 14 hour power cuts, no fuel. People were forced to stay in queues for hours. Not hours, actually days. Like, so there are like people died in queues, and there's serious like shortages of the essential items, cooking gas, because we import a lot of those things. No, so we import oil, we import most of our food, we import most of our energy sources and medicine and everything else. When we went into the economic crisis, basically because of the shortage of foreign exchange, we didn't have money to buy those stuff.
Okay.
So we were in crisis, and the crisis is still going on. Like, although government tried to say that we are recovering, but if you see the experiences of the majority of the population, we are facing day-to-day challenges. So that's been the biggest challenge at the moment. People don't see a future for themselves, especially young people. So people are leaving the country, the brain drain is heavy. So when kids are dropping out of school, and a lot of people are undernourished. So yeah, so that like that also impacting on, no, how we look at our future, no,
of course.
Education, health, and food security and everything is being challenged.
Mm.
So that's one of the biggest challenges we face at the moment. So we have the historical challenges we face, which are still continuing about the ethnic issue and the poverty, and now this new challenge of economic crisis is facing us. Yeah.
Wow, that's really quite a lot. And We also are aware of the debt crisis. So quite a few countries, or more than a few countries, have debt.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about, or how can you describe the debt crisis in Sri Lanka? And how does this debt crisis also now, as part of the economic crisis, yeah, impact the Sri Lankan people?
Yeah, so it's a long story in a way. So as I said earlier, we were under the colonial rule for almost four centuries.
Mm.
So from Portuguese to Dutch to English. So throughout the period, the colonial rulers have used Sri Lanka as a mainly a supplier for their raw materials and tea and coffee and spices.
Okay.
So there's very little has been done during that period to develop Sri Lanka's economy as on industries or agriculture.
Infrastructure.
So we were basically the suppliers of raw materials.
Mm.
So this plundering of the natural resources and the economy, wealth of the country has impacted the country.
Oh.
So when we got this so-called independence in 1948, and after that, we had very little kind of industries or industrialization or economy that is able to provide what we need as a country. So from that point onwards, we were so much of depending on imports. So basically, we were depending on importing of our, so we don't have oil or any other thing. So we are importing them, and we are importing our main like equipment, like technologies and everything. So we are like largely depends on what we import from outside.
Which must be expensive.
Yes, that's the thing. So, and then like we had our agriculture and everything else. And then we entered into, in 1970s, we entered into this so-called open economy, like the structural adjustments, like as per advice of the World Bank and everything.
We were IMF.
IMF.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have opened our economies, no?
Mm.
So then that also created this stage of where the government support for local industries, agriculture and everything kind of reduced drastically.
Right.
So because that we have opened the market and you get like cheap agriculture commodities from India or Pakistan or China or somewhere else, and that has hit badly to the local agriculture.
Yeah.
And then government has moved away from supporting agriculture, because in the open market theory, government is not supposed to protect the local producers.
Yeah.
So that has hit badly in the Sri Lankan economy. So whatever the capacity we had to produce what we want has diminished, has mm-hmm. reduced drastically. And whatever our exporting industries has kind of impacted badly.
Mm-hmm.
And only kind of export industries we had over the years is tea, which has been like kind of our colonial kind of a heritage.
Yes.
Which is like the profitability efficiency of the tea plantations are decreasing rapidly.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so because it's been the large scale monocultural tea.
Okay.
Soil has been destroyed now, environment has destroyed now.
Wow.
So now actually 80% of the Sri Lankan tea exports is being done by the small scale producers, not the large tea plantations. And that entire tea industry depends on the cheap labor, almost slavery labor,
mm.
from the workers that's been brought in during the British rule to Sri Lanka, South Indian workers, Tamil workers,
okay.
who are working in the tea plantation still in the country, has not been treated as the real citizens still, one of the lowest paid, most malnourished kind of a community in the country, especially women.
Yeah.
So we have tea, then we have garment industry, apparel industry. So we've been also told that within a global economic model.
So part of the fast fashion as well?
Yes. So we have this export processing zones, which produces like most of the brands that you can see in London markets and everywhere else. Once again, these factories, especially women labor has been trained. So where it's been, they have created this export special economic zones. So where there's no, very little labor laws are applied, workers are not allowed to unionize and everything else.
Wow.
Once again, really low paid work. You have like high scale of anemia, malnourishment among these young women who are working in this sector.
Right.
And then the third economic kind of like export, like the income we had is domestic workers who are migrating to Middle East and other countries under real terrible conditions. You get people getting killed there, dying, and like facing a lot of harassments. So basically, our economy, our main foreign, so like income source of foreign exchange, is selling cheap labor of women.
Cheap labor, yeah.
And that was our only income. And then we have a lot of other expenses that we have to like do to export all the others. So basically, so we earn very little amount of income, a foreign exchange, while we spend a lot. So if it's a household, if your expenses are higher than your incomes, you have to borrow.
Yeah, you have to borrow.
So historically, Sri Lanka has always been depending on foreign debt, being borrowed from earlier from the World Bank, Asian Development Bank, and everything else. And then by 2010, so they have kind of opened the market for these private creditors. So earlier it was more bilateral, multilateral debt, like countries like China, India, Japan been providing the loans to Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
They have their own issues also. This famous thing about Sri Lankan Chinese debt trap, where China has funded a lot of like really unsustainable kind of a disastrous projects in Sri Lanka.
Could you give us an example?
Yeah. So in Sri Lanka now, in Colombo, we are building this artificial city now next to the Colombo port. It's called Port City.
Oh.
Okay. So it's a complete artificial city. So they have been completely filled the sea, and which has destroyed a lot of marine resources at night, and feeling that has impacted the livelihood of the fisheries along the coastal line. There's a lot of protest about it, but they went on, and now they have built that city. You don't know for what. So they said it's an investment city earlier, then it's an entertainment city with a lot of casinos and everything else.
I see.
Now we don't have anything there, just like an area with full of sand.
Just sand?
Just sand, and then now they say there's like, now they try to introduce sand, motorbike riding and stuff like that. So they just try to figure out what they want to do with that.
Mm.
Okay, so that's Chinese loans. So that's been taken.
Right.
And there's a big port has been created in down south. And until now, there's airport. There's no planes coming in for that airport still, I think. Now we try to see to whom we can sell that airport, because no one's buying it.
How long has it been built?
So it's been like less than 10 years. So last
and
10
no
years.
And no one's used it as an airport?
No. It's been like say, one flight or some coming in here and there, but nothing much. So it's basically, so just keep it there.
Right.
We have a big port sitting there. So now like port. Now, so for the port, now finally we didn't have anything to do, so we had to hand over the port to China.
Oh.
So it's like, because we can't pay the loan back, China kind of took the port back. Now it's a Chinese owned port.
Mm.
Now they're operating it, but all the profits goes to them.
Right.
And so then we have this big tower in the middle of the capital, Colombo. You don't know what that tower is. So it's called Lotus Tower. So basically that was the symbol of the political party of the president. So they wanted to make that like their symbol visible to everyone. So they made that big lotus tower, which is once again Chinese funded. And there's a lot of other dams, like irrigation projects that's been created, which actually resulted in very little results, like a tangible results for the farmers, but created in a lot of other impacts, like farmers losing their land, livelihoods and everything else.
Right.
So basically both of these bilateral funds, especially Chinese one, we have used for this inefficient kind of project which not really benefited people but actually harmful for the people, their livelihoods and everything else.
Mm.
And then with that, the most of Chinese and other debt is being like highly kind of subject to corruption.
Mm.
So there's reports where from 2016 to 21, one third of the development loan we have taken have been unaccounted for. We don't know where that went.
Don't know where it's gone.
Yeah, so we know where it went, but it's not in the tangible. It's in someone's accounts in offshore accounts. So that's corruption. We had a big issue, and then the IMF and everyone has pushed Sri Lanka to go for these private creditors.
Yeah.
So now Sri Lanka's biggest kind of like loan portfolio is around 40% to 45% of the Sri Lankan loans are with the private creditors.
Is that like banks?
Yeah, it's banks. Yes, banks, vulture funds, pension funds.
Mm.
So you never know, because most of it's ISBs, no? International Sovereign Bonds.
Okay.
So actually, we don't know who owns this debt now.
Okay.
There's very little information. Actually, as Sri Lankans, we don't know to whom we are owing.
So the debts are being sold on and sold.
Yes, so it's basically central banks will sell their these bonds. And people buy it and then they sell it to someone else and it goes on. Like it's high interest, like 5 to 8%, 10% sometimes.
So they're all making money
off
these debts.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So Sri Lanka, for example, if you take 2021, so I think I have the numbers here. So in Sri Lanka, if you take 2021, so from our loans, around 12%, 36% of our loans are for ISBs.
Right.
And then 76% of our interest payments are for ISBs. It's like wow. You get like you have a small like it's about 36%, but most of the interest has been paid for ISBs. So basically, that's where we are at the moment.
That's where you are.
And then we had the war for 30 years, where a lot of loans has been taken, especially most of the ISBs been taken from 2006 afterwards. So that's the last stages of the war. So it's basically government has took loans to bomb our own people.
Right.
So that loan has been taken to buy low bombs, fighter jets, basically to kill our own people, which has killed hundreds of thousands of people. So we are in this debt trap in country at the moment. Is this so? No. So we earn very little, and we spend almost 100% of our income to pay this interest back. And so we don't have anything else. So that's where we are at the moment. As a result of that, then COVID came.
Yeah, so what happened during that? Because that just impacted everybody.
Yes,
so
we had, before COVID, we had in 2019, we had this Easter bombs, where earlier they thought all it's ISIS. So there was like a kind of a wave of bomb attacks on Easter Sunday in 2019, if I'm not correct.
Oh, yes, I think in a church.
Yeah, there was like three churches. And then two tourist hotels. Mm. It has killed around 250 people. So that has happened. So that has impacted badly on our tourism.
Mm.
And then COVID came and tourism completely kind of went to zero. And the foreign remittances, whatever the foreign remittances we get, has stopped because people lost their jobs in other countries also.
Right.
So whatever the foreign income we had has completely dried down.
Mm.
So basically by starting of 2022, we didn't have anything as foreign reserves. So we had very few amount, which is not sufficient even for pay the next installment of our debt repayments.
Okay, so you couldn't really even make that.
Yeah, so that's the debt crisis in 2022 April. We didn't have any other option. We have defaulted. Yeah, so that's we officially in a way called ourselves bankrupt.
What's the impact of that?
Yeah, so at that period, that was like when I said that we faced the crisis.
Yeah.
So we didn't have anything, any foreign exchange to import anything. No? So there was a serious shortage of fuel. So we used a lot of fuel to produce our electricity. So we didn't have enough fuel to produce electricity. So there were power cuts for 13 hours per day. And there's no fuel at all. People were staying in queues to get their cars pumped or anything for weeks, 5 days. So I stayed 3-4 days in fuel queues. Every one of us had to stay. People died in those queues, and then cooking gas, and then kerosene. There's no kerosene, cooking gas. It has impacted really badly for the people who are living in the urban centers.
Mm.
If you live in Colombo, for example, you will live in an apartment house, very small apartment house, this low-income, middle-income housing schemes.
Okay.
You can't use firewood to cook. You are completely depending on either cooking gas or kerosene to cook, and if you don't have that, then you can't cook. And then without electricity, you can't, because it's so hot and everything else. Without a fan, you can't sleep. Kids can't sleep, and so much of issues. So that was a huge crisis. And there's no milk powder. So milk powder is one of the main source of food for the children.
Yeah.
There's a serious shortage of
milk powder.
Was that
imported normally?
Those are long stories. We used to be, in a way, more or less self-sufficient with our milk production. But with the open economy, where Nestle and Fonterras came, now we import around 85% of our food, basically milk powder, basically from outside.
Wow.
So we basically depends on foreign, exported food items.
Okay.
So that has impacted heavily. So that was the crisis.
So your organization, could you tell us a little bit more about that? And how do you tackle the debt crisis?
Yeah, so for us, our organization, we have not worked on debt per se for long. So we are more for, as I said earlier, more for human rights organization. So we work on the human rights violations, be it civil and political rights or be it economic rights. But what we see now, especially with the debt crisis, And what happened with the debt crisis, especially the kind of that IMF bailout package that Sri Lanka has entered into the in December 2022, mm-hmm. late 2022. So because of the IMF package, so what's basically happening, what IMF is saying now, so what we realize is this entire debt is the new form of colonialism. Mm. It's a new form of imperialism where this global financial structure is in a way being allowed to exploit whatever we have in our countries in the name of debt. So we think it's really unfair, it's unjust, and it's illegitimate. Because as ordinary citizen of Sri Lanka, I was never been part of these discussions. Mm. I didn't know why they take the loans, why they take this, who the our debtors are, who are the creditors are, and then who are the, like why we took it, what are the conditions. I didn't know anything.
Right.
And my life has benefited very little, if not nothing, from these loans. Mm. In fact, the conditions that they try to implement because of these loans, my life went back. If I'm a farmer in the country, these big development projects, whatever, through the Chinese funded loans or whatever it is, has destroyed my livelihoods. IMF proposed free market economies and everything, deregulations and privatization of health, education and all other sectors, destroyed my life, like it basically. So now, and then war and the loans taken for the war has basically used to bomb my people, kill my people. Now they asked me to pay that loan back. Mm. Now basically, so what we said, this is legitimate. We should not pay as an organization. That's our position. Our position is that as Sri Lankans, as ordinary Sri Lankans, we are not responsible for this debt crisis. We are not, we shouldn't pay and we will not pay. But what's happening, but what IMF is telling our governments, no, you have to pay it. What I am saying, if you have to continue, then IMF came into Sri Lanka. Then they said, okay, we will support you. Only thing you have to do is to continue paying this debt because they wanted to protect this global financial structure. So what basically they have done now, they have put entire burden of the debt crisis onto the ordinary people.
Mm.
So if you see the last 1 year, what has happened? So there are a few conditions that IMF imposed. No? So they just gave us 2.5 billion rupees, $5 billion. That's the IMF loan. Our total debt is 50 billion. So 2.5 billion can't do anything.
No.
So like first tranche of that loan has been used to pay debt that we have taken from India again.
So not even to use for the programs for the no, to nothing, help the people.
Nothing, no.
Or the...
So basically what IMF says, we'll give you this money.
Mm.
So there will be trust in the international creditors, private creditors, so they can like provide you more loans. So for Sri Lanka to be able, for IMF making our debt sustainable means, we should be able to continue paying our creditors. For that, they wanted us to cut down our expenses and increase our income as government.
Mm.
So what government has done, basically cut down their social expenses, fuel subsidies, electricity subsidies, and government spending on social security, health and education, everything has been reduced. And the other side, burden debt, like the taxes has been increased, like the indirect taxes has increased, taxes has been imposed on the income of the middle class people.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, there's now it's a situation where we basically is entire country is suffering, people are suffering.
Mm.
But IMF, what IMF said in December, they are really happy with the progress Sri Lanka making because we are kind of collecting our money back to pay, keep paying our creditors.
Mm.
So IMF is happy, although we are dying, kids can't go to school, we are malnourished and our health and education is falling apart. But IMF is happy because we can pay our debt back to our creditors. So we will be eligible to get more debt. So basically what we are doing, we are kind of losing whatever the capacity we have in developing our own economies.
Mm.
Because our industries are failing, our businesses are falling down, people are leaving the country. Agriculture, fisheries, everything are collapsing. So we are basically losing whatever the capacity we had in developing our economy. So we will be more and more depending on the external debt.
Mm.
And then we will keep paying those debt and we will keep borrowing debt. So what IMF is leading us to a continuous, never-ending debt trap.
Debt trap.
So as an organization works on human rights, we think this is like serious violation of human rights.
Mm.
This is a violation of people's right to live life, people's right to food, people's right to education, health, and self-determination, everything else. So we see IMF as one of the biggest violators of our human rights. And the debt issue is one of the main concerns for the human rights of Sri Lanka at the moment. So that's why as a human rights organization, we work on the debt issue.
And how is your organization working with CAFOD to try to sort of tackle this issue?
Yeah, so LST has been working with CAFOD for the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
So CAFOD program in Sri Lanka is mainly what we work with CAFOD is a program we call Active Citizenship. What we say, what our kind of approach to the like kind of program is, but through the CAFOD support, what we work with the local civil society, community organizations, movements to build people's capacities so they can stand against these unjust policies, unjust like actions of the government and kind of propose and strengthen democracy. Because what we see, citizens are the key for the democracy. So CAFOD, through CAFOD program, what we do mainly work with the social movements, farmers organizations, fisheries, trade unions, work with them, do research, do advocacy, so build their capacities. So they have the capacity to stand against these unjust policies, be it IMF or anyone else, and also propose viable alternative policy framework. So supporting working with them and like towards this is what we do with CAFOD.
That's really great to hear that. And it's really great that we're able to work together for this. Yeah. How would a life change for a family in Sri Lanka if the debt crisis was resolved?
Yeah, so that's like I said, like, so we spend almost 100% of our income to repay debt.
Yeah.
If we don't have to pay that, we will have more money for our education, more money for our health. No, so there will be government, country as a country, we will have money to spend on our education. Oh. So that means our children will have better opportunities to attain higher education, and better education opportunities, better job opportunities. We will have better access, better health services. That will like, we'll have like better living conditions. Oh. No, so like the government will have money to invest in our agriculture, invest our local economies, industries. So that means we'll have like better livelihoods, have better incomes to kind of like sustain a better life. So basically, like every aspect of our lives will have like a better quality in it if we don't have to pay this debt, because that's more certain. And as a country, we will have more space to decide what we want to do.
Right.
No, so
right.
Although we say we are independent now, we celebrate our independence on 4th of February, like because they say we took the independence from like British colonial rule in 1948. But if you really think it's, we are not independent. We just basically implement what IMF says us to do. Mm. So ending of the debt crisis means that's the real independence for us.
Right.
Our governments, our rulers, everyone will have the space to decide what we want to do. Mm. So and people will be able to better position to influence governments to do what we want to do, not IMF wants to do. So basically it's about independence and more rights and like have a, like access to a dignified life.
And that's like the rights of countries, isn't it? A country has the right to decide what they want to do, how they want to look after their people, or, you know, you don't need another outside force telling you how you need to live.
Yeah, and also I think when it comes to countries, I think that's where this CAFOD program where we talk about active citizenship, you can't take the country also as a whole, because we don't think our rulers represent us. So it's about people have the right to decide what they want to do.
Yeah,
people have the power to decide what it is. That's the whole idea of the CAFOD program, what we call active citizenship, is build that power within people. So we as country, as citizens, have the right to decide what we want to do. And if we don't have this debt trap, if we don't have the influence of IMF, we will have a better chances of doing that and dealing it with our own governments.
And debt is a huge issue affecting so many countries. Do you feel like you are part of a global sort of movement to tackle this?
We should definitely. So that's kind of like our biggest kind of a request from the public in UK and everywhere else. This is a battle that we can win on our own.
Yeah.
Because Sri Lanka is a small country, as we said, we are depending on so much on our export, like imports and everything else. So this is a battle that we can't win alone. And this is not our own battle also. No, so this is like at the moment, they say more than 50 countries are in the same trap.
Right.
So it should be a global battle. As I said earlier, so it should be a global battle. It's a battle that should not only be fought in the streets of Colombo. It should be fought in streets of London, streets of Paris, So New York and everywhere else, because this is kind of like the next independent struggle for the world. So it's, it has to be a global campaign. It has to be a international campaign, public campaign. So we definitely want to be part of that kind of campaign.
And our CAFOD supporters are so interested in campaigning. They are so close to the issues. How can they get involved in the UK with the End in the Debt campaign?
Yeah, I think there are a few specific ways. As far as I know, like there's this big discussion in UK at the moment to get the revise the private creditor legislations. Because this most of the like kind of like bonds that Sri Lanka holds or the third world countries hold are being managed by either UK legislations or New York legislations. So that legislations at the moment kind of provide a lot of space for the creditors, a lot of power to the creditors. Mm. So we definitely have to get that legislation changed. So I know CAFOD and some other organizations, UK is part of the campaign, is trying to get these legislations like revised. And hopefully with the new government within the next few months, hopefully. So you will have a better chance of that. So we need UK people to support that campaign.
Okay.
And not just that, I think, because UK government is a powerful government, which has say in IMF, which has say in World Bank, a lot of, most of the, some of these private creditors are UK companies.
Yeah.
So I think UK citizens can force these governments, these companies to be more responsible, be more ethical, and we should name and shame these companies who kind of do this plundering. And there's a lot that if we can get UK government, for example, to talk about these issues and be more responsible about these issues and willing to act on these issues, there's a lot can be changed. So citizens in this country can do that.
And that's fabulous. And I think they can. And we know our lovely listeners have always been at the forefront of campaigning. So I'm sure that they will be very keen to join in this global challenge to overcome this debt. When debt gets cancelled, what future do you see for the people of Sri Lanka? So you've explained a little bit about, you know, the opportunity for the education for the children. What would you like to see? Do you have like a bigger hope?
If I take my family, so I have two kids. So my son is doing A-levels next year. So if we don't have to pay debt, my son will have better universities to go in Sri Lanka. Now he might have to leave the country because he's not sure with what he can do in Sri Lanka anymore. So he can stay in Sri Lanka. He can study in Sri Lanka. And a lot of young people in the Sri Lanka will have better access to education that provides us, opens them like a lot of other opportunities. But in Sri Lanka at the moment, less than around 1% of the like children has the opportunity to go to universities because there's no space in universities because there's little funding available in education. And my mother, my other children, my children, my wife, my family, everyone will have better access to health. We know now people are suffering because of lack of health and lack of health opportunities, there's no health facilities. So we'll have better health opportunities. We'll have better jobs. Our farmers will have like better investment in their agriculture. They will have better life. They can see better futures for the country. And young people will be less dissatisfied with about their future. There'll be less conflicts. So as a country, as people, we will have like a better kind of a life and better chances of having a better life. No, more chances of having a better life if we don't have to be in this crisis. And that if that is that, I, for me, that's really independent. So then we will be free to decide what we want. And then, yeah. And there will be less immigrant issues for UK also. People, there will be less people migrating from our countries to UK.
I know that, yeah, that's a topic that features in our country a lot. Yeah. But it's true, because debt is like just like a big thing that's kind of choking you. Even individuals with individual debt, it's such a heavy weight. It's just, it's incredible. It's incredible. So thank you so much, Sandoon. Thank you very, very much for sharing with us today about what's happening in Sri Lanka. I feel like we've learned a lot by listening to you and realising things started, you know, from historical reasons. It's not just things that just happened just now. I hope our lovely listeners have really enjoyed today's podcast. We've learned a lot about debt and we've learned a lot about how it's affecting the people of Sri Lanka and what we can do to try to help to overcome this, because we can all do something, particularly petitioning our governments. So thank you again, Sandoon, for sharing your perspectives. Let's continue to amplify the voices who are advocating for debt justice and support positive change worldwide. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you soon.